This week we have Jason Fried on the program. We discuss how he made thousands of dollars in high school, why he chose DHH as a partner, and the thinking behind Basecamp Breeze and Basecamp Personal. This episode is sponsored by Sprintly. Most stakeholders just want to know how much stuff was completed last week. The Sprintly team cadence graph does just that. It clearly shows you what the team has completed over the last 7 days. You can try Sprintly for free. Go to www.sprint.ly. A quick note about the audio quality of the show. Jason had a bad Wi-Fi connection that caused Skype to drop out at numerous times in the interview. We felt like the content was good, and so we released the show, even though the audio is not up to our standard. In order to serve you, the listener, we paid to have a transcript made so you can read the interview. You can see this at productpeople.tv/Jason Fried. Thanks for being our listener. We're starting something new with this episode. You can hear about that at the end of the show. Hi, I'm Justin.
And I'm Kyle.
And this is Product People, the show about beautiful products and the people who make them.
And this is a pretty exciting episode because our guest today is Jason Fried of 37 Signals. And of course, 37 Signals is the company behind Basecamp and a bunch of other popular products, as well as the best-selling book, Rework. So Jason, it's a pleasure to have you today. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Perfect. Well, Jason, you guys have been really busy at 37 Signals. You've built a bunch of new stuff this year. But before we get into all that, I want to know, have you always been making products? Is this something you've been doing, you know, just since you started 37 Signals, or was there stuff you'd built and sold before that?
Yeah, when I first got started in computers, it was like I was in junior high. I'm 38 now, so I guess that was, 25 years ago or something, I guess. I got a computer. I just started messing around with it. And one of the things that I wanted to do was I wanted to keep track of all the different tapes and CDs that I had. And so I went up on, eventually got on AOL, which this is way before the formal internet was around. So I went on AOL and went to the file section and searched in the Mac section for like music organizing tools. I found some stuff and I downloaded those things. And they were mostly based in FileMaker Pro, which is a database. And I had FileMaker Pro so I could run them. And I just didn't like them. I don't know what it was, but they weren't attractive. They weren't easy to use. They were complicated. They were doing far more things than I really needed. I just needed this really kind of simple thing. I wanted to look good and be fast. So I ended up just figuring that I could figure out how to make this sort of thing myself. So I had FileMaker. I started screwing around, started learning how to do it, and I eventually made a product called AudioFile, which I started using to catalog my music collection. And then I basically wrote a little text file, a README file, basically. And in there, I said, "Hey, if you like this, it's $20. Send me a check or send me $20," and I put my address down. And then I uploaded it to AOL. And see what would happen. I had no idea. And then one day I got a check in the mail. Well, I got an envelope in the mail from a guy in Germany, and I didn't know anybody in Germany. I hadn't heard anyone from Germany. I had never been there. And so my parents gave me this envelope, this airmail kind of envelope, and I opened it up, and there was a printout of that README file and $20. And that was the start for me of selling software. And after that, I started taking off, and I mean, it didn't put me through college or anything, but I had a nice amount of spending money, extra spending money in college, just from this $20 shareware tool that I made, and really made, tens of thousands of dollars or more selling it over the next few years.
You're kidding me. Like, actually tens of thousands of dollars selling this little shareware app?
Yes, tens of thousands of dollars, $20 a pop.
Oh, wow. So what was that like? Did that seem significant to you? I mean, I would love to make $10,000 now. As a high school kid, was that pretty significant?
Oh yeah, it was. I mean, I've always had jobs too, so I've been working since I've been 13. That worked, grocery stores and shoe stores and gas stations and all the stuff. So I had part time jobs anyway. So I always had, spending money. But it was great to have extra money coming in and to have a significant amount and for it to be sort of this passive money in that I didn't have to actually, I didn't feel like I was working for it. I'd already done the work, which was make the software.
Yeah.
And then money just kept coming in. Unlike my, part-time jobs where I had to go, after school, I had to go work for 4 hours or something every day or whenever I did it. So that was a real nice thing. And it was great. It was killer. I bought a bunch of stuff, that I wanted, like a stereo and, whatever. Just a bunch of garbage probably at the end of the day. But I bought stuff because I'm like, hey, I have some money to buy stuff. And then in college, it came in handy because I didn't work during college, so I needed some money to spend. So that was handy. And yeah, it was great. It was, but it was a revelation that, the understanding was that, or the thing I realized early on was that people are happy to pay for things that are good. And don't be afraid to charge for your services. Don't be afraid to charge for what you produce. And if those people who don't want to pay for it want to complain about it, that's fine. They don't have to buy it. But there's plenty of people out there who appreciate something good and are happy to cough up some cash for it because they think it's worth their time and it makes their life better.
Yeah. What did your folks think about this when this was going on when you're in high school? Are you from an entrepreneurial family?
Sort of. My grandfather started a grocery store chain way back when, so he sort of was working on his own. My dad worked for someone else for a while, but then he was working on his own. So a little bit of that. I mean, I always kind of felt like I'd be an entrepreneur at some level. My dad always encouraged me to be that way. But making money thing from this software-y thing on this thing called AOL, that was like a whole, my parents didn't get it.
Yeah.
And I kind of was surprised too, but they just kept seeing checks coming in the mail for me. Every, whenever I get home from school or something, there'd be a pile of envelopes, for me. So it's like they liked it at a certain point, obviously.
That's hilarious. If I all of a sudden had $10,000 in envelopes, my parents would have some questions for me.
Well, of course, this is sprouted over many years. But yeah, I mean, they're like, what's going on? And I showed them. I'm like, I made this thing and people are paying for it. And they totally, they understood that part of it. They didn't understand what the thing was. But
yeah,
they got like, yeah, people pay for things they want to buy. And okay, people are paying for it. Good for you.
Yeah, that's great.
And so how old did you say you were when you first did this?
I can't exactly remember, but I feel like I started doing the computer stuff like in junior high. And then I feel like it was probably sometime in high school when I actually released the product.
Okay.
The audio file product. I think it's been so long. I don't remember the exact years, but I started before I went to college and I kind of kept it going through college. And then I sort of stopped after that.
Gotcha. That's got to be quite a revelation for, like a late adolescent kid. I know around that time is sort of when, I got a part-time job after school and this whole idea of like, hey, I guess this is just how the world works. You kind of like trade your hours for dollars sort of thing. And meanwhile, you were kind of seeing the opposite end of the spectrum. You're like, you build this thing one time and collect mad checks. So what was that like? Yeah. As I imagine none of your friends were doing something like that. They were kind of like doing the old thing. So,
well, I always had tried to sell other things too. So I eventually at one point I got a reseller's license when I was, 14 or 15. I went with my dad like downtown somewhere. I don't remember all the details either. It was a long time ago, but we got this license that allowed me to buy things from distributors at cost. And then I could resell them to my friends, for like a double, because it was still cheaper than it would have been to get stuff in a store. Or if it wasn't double, it was like, I'd make 50% or something. So like I had friends who were buying like cordless phones for me and like radar detectors for their car and stuff. Like at the store, it was like, $200 and I paid like 110 and I sold it for like 160 or something. So I made $50, So I've always been into the buying and selling and the business side of things. But the thing that was cool about software was that, I felt like the majority of the effort was up front and then the payments came afterwards, which I kind of liked, compared to, doing a reseller thing where you have to go buy inventory and then sell it and then you gotta buy more inventory and you're always working hard for the same amount of money instead of putting in a lot of creativity up front and then reaping the rewards down the road.
Right. Yeah, it totally makes sense. So if we were like fast forward a little bit to your 37 Signals, start at 37 Signals, you guys started off as a design agency, correct?
That's right.
So that would be a little bit different, I guess, than selling a product where you do all this upfront work and then collect on it sort of over the life of the product. But so you started as a design agency, but eventually transitioned into your first product, Basecamp. Do you maybe want to talk about what that was like going from an agency to creating a product? Like what prompted you guys to build Basecamp? Was the idea of changing into a product company something you guys had from the start, or was it sort of like, let's build this and see what happens?
The product Basecamp came from our own needs. So we were a consulting firm or doing website design for people. And we just got busier and busier doing that work, and we needed a better way to manage these projects we were doing for clients. We were basically delivering things via email, which is fine, it works, but it's just didn't feel that, I don't know, professional is the word I used. I don't like that word today, but back then I'm like, this doesn't feel professional or something. And then there's no like permanent record of things. It was just like in inboxes spread out all over the place. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way to do this sort of thing. And so we looked around at some tools that existed on the market but weren't really solving the problems. It's very similar to me way back in the day looking for music cataloging tools. And I couldn't find something that just did what I needed to do. It was, all these things were doing other things that I didn't need. So we decided to build our own project management tool for ourselves. And as we were building it, we were using it, and we were using it with our clients. And they were saying things like, hey, I need this sort of thing too. What is this? Like, I've got projects. I need to manage my projects. Where can I buy this thing? And we said, well, we're building this thing. You know, we finished it up, used it some more, and then polished it up to turn it into a product. Released it in February 2004 with a goal that if it could make $5,000 a month after the first year. So we figured it would take like a year for it to make $5,000 a month. Then we'd be happy because it'd be, you know, it's about 60 grand a year, which is like a nice client project. And we'd be doing our client work and we'd have this like, quote, free money, this free 60 grand coming in every year. But it turned out that we hit that number in like 5 or 6, 7, 8 weeks, something like that. I don't remember the exact time, but like, oh, wow. It didn't take a year. It took like a month, 2 months, and it was doing more than 5,000 a month. So we knew we were onto something. It just turned out that a year later, I was doing more money than our consulting business was. We stopped doing the consulting stuff and started doing product development, or started not developing products, but just focused on Basecamp. And the rest is sort of history for that.
Right, yeah. Cool.
So, Jason, maybe we can talk a little bit about, because along that time, you met this guy named David Hanemeyer Hansen. And, you know, this is maybe you can give Kyle and I some advice, because him and I are new partners on this podcast. And it's similar. We met each other online, and now we've got a little bit of revenue. And I think, you know, in some ways, Kyle and I are at the point where we're saying, you know, do we want to actually partner up for real and make this official? How did you go through that process with David?
Well, David, I originally hired David. He was in school at the time. And I hired him to give me 10 hours a week. Actually, there's something before that. I made this thing called Single File, which is a book collection database online. And I made it, and I was kind of getting stuck. And so I asked some people for some help. And David was one of the people who heard about that I needed help. He wrote me an email, started helping me back and forth. This is just free like advice. And I'm like, I really like this guy. I like his advice. I like how clear he is and whatever. So I hired him to do that project for me, to finish that tool. And that worked out really well. And so that was the first project we did together. Then I said, this other project came up at 37 Signals, which was an intranet project for a client of ours called Summit Credit Union. We were doing the redesign, but then we said, hey, maybe we could sell them on some functionality too. So I said, hey, David, would you be up being the programmer on this? We'll do the design, do the programming, and we'll sell this thing. And he said, sure. He was a student. He was looking for money, you know. So we worked together on that project. which was a great project. And then we worked together on some other projects like that. And then he was getting out of school, and we were talking, and so I hired him as a contractor to do Basecamp, and then hired him as an employee, and then from an employee eventually became a partner in the business. So it was a series of tests, basically. But they weren't really tests. They were just like, that's looking back, it looks like they were tests. But they were really just experiences working together on at a different capacity along the way, and then realizing that we got along well, we'd be good partners in the business. And he was, the key was that he was introducing a skill, or he was bringing a skill to the table that I didn't have. So he was a programmer, I was a designer. He wasn't a designer, I wasn't a programmer. So we complemented each other really well, which I think is important for partners. Yeah. And that's how it happened. So it happened over a series of years, gaining trust, working together. And that's how it all came together eventually.
Was there any part of you that was still nervous when you made that jump to saying, you know, I'm actually going to give you a part of this company that we've built? Was there any sort of like hesitation, or by that point had you built enough trust to say, you know what, I trust this guy, we can go ahead on this?
Well, there was hesitation just because it's a big step to do that. And I had a couple partners before 37 Signals. And at this point I was on back on my own again at 37 Signals. So there's a couple of things. One didn't work out early. The other guy just left a few years later. They were all good, amicable separations, but I'm like, you know, I'm back to my own again. Do I want to go back in this whole partner thing? Do I want to go down that road again? Mm-hmm. So there was that, of course, but, David was, I could tell that David was a special, unique guy, and that had we not partnered up, I would have gone off to do his own thing. So it was sort of it was a risk. It'd be actually, I kind of saw it as a bigger risk not to get him more involved. I also thought that he would contribute a lot more as an owner and everything. While there was that initial sort of, do I really want to go down this partner thing road again? Mm-hmm. There was also the, yes, this makes sense, and I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to bet on this guy. I believe in him. And I'll make a bet and see what happens. And it was a good bet, obviously.
Yeah, it paid off.
Yep.
Well, maybe one last question in kind of just the background story. When you guys started, you know, doing Basecamp and started blogging, you were kind of the underdogs. No one really knew who you were. And, you know, your biggest competitor was, you know, Microsoft in the project management space. But now, especially in the tech community, a lot of people know who you are. How does it feel to have all of this attention now? What's it like? Has it changed from when you first started? And does it make it harder? Does it make it easier? Do you like the attention? What's that like?
I don't really think about it. I mean, I think I know that we have the ability to get attention by saying things or announcing things or whatever, but it doesn't affect our decisions day to day. But like when we have a new product, we're lucky that we have a, you know, people do care about what we're doing, and some people love it, some people hate it and whatever. But the point is that we know that when we have something to say, people will listen. So that's good. That's a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. But day to day, I don't think about it. I'm more of a private guy. I don't like to seek attention. I'd rather be at home, more homebody, kind of, you know, introverted person. So, like, it's one of the reasons why I don't go to a lot of conferences and stuff. And I just don't really want the attention.
Yeah.
I just want to, like, do great work and build cool stuff. And that's what I'm focused on. So, you know, one of the things is of course, when you're, more people know about you, their expectations are different. And in many ways, it's very hard to meet people's expectations on a consistent basis when they have their own sort of expectations that are sort of impossible You know, so when you release a new product, it's very easy for people to go, is that all they could do? Like, is that it? You know, that sort of thing, which you wouldn't get that normally if you were brand new.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that stuff, but for the most part, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's great to have the ability to not have to pay for attention, because we've earned it over the years, and that's definitely helpful.
Yeah. Well, this segues into something that Kyle was asking me about, which was the Basecamp relaunch, right, Kyle?
Yeah, so I think it's been close to a year since you guys relaunched Basecamp, correct? I think you launched in start of March of 2012.
That's right.
So, I mean, I've worked in the past at places where we've decided to rebuild the product from scratch, and it usually, it ends up being good, but it's also in some ways never really as good as you imagine, or it takes a little bit longer. So, and some people tend to say, like, you know, you should never rebuild your product, which I don't personally think, but there's a pretty strong following for that line of thinking. So I'd be curious to know, now that you guys are a year into it, looking back on it, what originally prompted you guys to take on this huge risk of rebuilding a successful product, and how did it go? Like, did it take longer than you might have thought, or have you been overall happy with how it's went?
Yeah, it was it's pretty heavy internal thing, actually, mostly between me and David initially. So the new Basecamp was my idea. Like, I want to, let's build a new Basecamp, let's start over, let's solve similar problems but new ways. And so I started working on this, and this is typically how new product development works here. I'll have some idea and I'll just start like mocking it up and screwing around and whatever. And then I'll show David to get his feedback on it. Because David has a really insightful take on things, and he also reacts quickly, which is good and bad, but really good when you're showing an idea, you know, because like it's good to see quick reactions to things. So anyway, so I go off on my own and work with another designer or something and do something, and then I show David. And initially David wasn't convinced, because he's always, like you mentioned, and it's sort of said in the industry that total rewrites are usually a huge mistake. They usually don't turn out as well as they should. It's a ton of time spent for very little return, and it's sort of like the curse of software development. So he was naturally opposed to that, which I totally understood too. And I was sort of feeling like, let's not get stuck not doing something because we're not supposed to. Like, let's try something and see if we can do something that we're not supposed to. Like, let's not stop doing it because we're not supposed to. Let's start doing it because we're not supposed to and see what happens. So we went back to the drawing board on some stuff. He had some really good feedback on a few things, and I went back and just changed the design around and messed around and presented to him again. And he started seeing sort of where it was going and got really excited about it. The idea behind it was not to recreate Basecamp that we already had. And that's what happens with a lot of rewrites. It's like a team will rewrite a product, and what will come out is the exact same product with a new code base. That's not worth the time. We were going to approach the same problems, which was communication and collaboration and sharing information and keeping it all in one place online and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's like a perfect example of like when it does make sense to possibly do a rewrite. When a lot of people say to not do a rewrite or it's a mistake, is I think because in a lot of cases when a company decides to do a rewrite, the decision is technology based. Like, let's migrate from this old technology stack to a newer technology stack because of these technology reasons. But in your guys' case, it sounds like you learned a lot and gained a lot of insight from running Basecamp, the first version, and it probably gave you some different ways to approach the problems. And so it's kind of like a problem-solving reason to approach rebuild rather than technology.
Yeah, and we also got to use a lot of new technology. One of the reasons why we couldn't improve the old, because one of the things we talked about was, could we take these ideas that we come up with, and sort of fix Basecamp Classic, the original Basecamp? Could we change it in these ways? And it just turns out that when you have a product that's been around for years, there's so much legacy built up, technology legacy, also customer expectations, that if you go off and change it drastically, it really ends up being very difficult. So we decided to keep the old Basecamp, which we renamed Basecamp Classic, around forever. As long as people are using it, it's going to stick around. A lot of people still use it. But we're going to focus our efforts on the new Basecamp, new tech, new ideas, the whole thing, and run both versions. But when you're a new customer, you only get the new one. But anyone who's on the old one can stay on the old one, or they can move to the new one if they want. As far as how long it took about a year to do. We wanted to take a little bit less time. We thought it might take 6 months originally or something. But we made a lot of decisions as we went and changed a lot of things and did some stuff and worked for months on something and threw it out and things like that. So we went back and forth, but I'm extremely happy with how it came out. I think it's, aside from the original decision to make Basecamp, it's the best decision as a company we've ever made to redo it. I think it gives us a lot of opportunity to do some really interesting things moving forward as well. So we're really thrilled with it. Customers are loving it. The numbers that we care about are all up. It's sort of, in many ways, put us back on the map, which is good for us too, because, you know, we built this thing 8 years ago, and that's kind of a long time ago. So it's good to show we can do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the last few minutes we have here, I want to talk about Basecamp Breeze and Basecamp Personal, because you recently got rid of a bunch of maybe products that were kind of low cost or for consumers, like Draft, Backpack, Tada, and Writeboard. And I was a little bit surprised when you guys came out with these two personal products. And they're both, you just pay once and you can use it forever. So. Right. What was the thinking behind that? Why launch these products aimed at consumers?
Well, they're not really aimed at consumers necessarily. So let's kind of throw that word out just for a second. The idea behind these two products was we were actually setting up some mailing lists, and I was just realizing like how complicated it is to set up a mailing list. It's kind of ridiculous how hard it is.
Yeah,
and like Google Lists or Google Groups and Yahoo Groups and stuff. That's all you can do it. It's just they're really complicated for just simple things, which is like I just want an email address I can send an email to and have everyone get it, and anyone who responds to that email goes to everyone else too. Like that's all I wanted. And a lot of people actually use Basecamp this way. A lot of people use Basecamp as a mailing list, where they'll post messages and it gets sent out to everybody, the whole thing. And so we just said, like, what if we totally stripped this out and just built a real simple mailing list tool, as sort of an experiment in single pay software. So everything else we've ever really done has been subscription based. Could we make something that was so damn simple and sell for 10 times and just see what happens? So we did that, and that's what Basecamp Breeze is. And the idea maybe is that perhaps people cross over to Basecamp when they hear about Basecamp Breeze. They'll check it out. They'll get on a list. They'll find it out. They'll follow a URL and they'll find, hey, there's this other Basecamp thing. And so it's a little bit of a marketing experiment, and a pricing experiment, and that's kind of what that's all about. Yeah. Basecamp Personal, on the other hand, is a direct response to customers asking us if they can use Basecamp for personal projects or projects for their volunteer group or church group or something. Because they want to use Basecamp for that, but the pricing model just doesn't work. It's too expensive, and or the subscription model isn't a good model for like a home renovation project, which might take 6 months or a month, who knows, and then it can get really expensive as you keep going. So we had this idea that we could basically sell individual Basecamp projects for $25 each, and you can use them as long as you want, and you only have to pay $25. There's some limitations, like there's only a gig of space, and you can only ask or invite 5 people, and there's no calendar and some other stuff. But it's pointed currently at people who already use Basecamp, already know Basecamp. They don't have to be sold on it. They love it already at work, but they want to use it for other stuff. And it's just $25 one time per project. So that was a fun experiment, because that's an example of selling the same product in a different way. Like, we didn't have to change the code base, really. We just, like, pulled some stuff out. It's the same exact code base. Basecamp Personal and Basecamp are the same thing, It's just a different pricing model, and there's some different walls up in different places. And so far, our Basecamp Personal has been really successful. We sold close to 1,000 projects. So it's like 25 grand in less than a month, just kind of put this thing out there, barely making any noise about it. And pretty soon we're going to open it up to everybody in the world. So right now it's only available to Basecamp customers. But we're going to let anyone create their own Basecamp project soon. But for now, it's just focused on existing users.
Yeah, I'd love to check up with you in a year and see if there was a marketing benefit from that, if there was a crossover from Breeze and Personal. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious. I don't know. We don't know. It's just a guess. It's way too early to say anyway. But maybe in a year we'll know more.
All right, so we're just about out of time here, so I thought maybe we would end with one last quick question. Jason, what sort of advice would you offer for a solo product creator? Do you think, based on your experience, should they maybe set out to build like a full SaaS app like Basecamp, or do you think there's a market for smaller products like Breeze, like a one-off, one price, a little bit smaller scope? Where would be a good place for somebody to start?
It's hard to say, but what I can tell you is that Basecamp Breeze on its own would not support anybody yet. It's $10. So let's just say we even sold 10,000 Breeze accounts, right? That's 100 grand, which is nice, obviously. We haven't sold 10,000. We have to sell a lot more to get anywhere close to that. So it'd be very hard, I think, to make enough money selling one-off things like this that require ongoing support. It's different when you are maybe talking about an iPhone app or something where you sell once and you're not supporting the server and the infrastructure, just like the app. So I think if you want to go down the one price road to start, I wouldn't build a web app that does that, because that requires 24/7 uptime and that kind of stuff. And we're fortunate that we have that whole infrastructure already set up, so we can do that sort of thing and experiment that sort of thing. But it's not going to support someone very long. So I would definitely suggest people, if they're going to build something for themselves or build their first product, and maybe they're just on their own right now, to try and do something with recurring revenue, because it will take a lot of the pressure off making sure the bills get paid and that you have some money to spend yourself, and you can control the cash flow a lot more. And I just think that's a better place to start. I think once you have a successful customer base and infrastructure and stuff, you can really start to experiment with single pricing plan options and stuff like that. But I also wouldn't try and build something very big either. I think you can build something real simple. You could charge $20-$30 a month for it if it's a solid product. I would also focus on business stuff, because businesses are happy to pay for things generally. It doesn't need to do a whole lot. It just needs to be useful, and you can build a nice business that way. So I would stay away from the consumer business too as a single product person who's starting out, just because it's very hard to get it's just hard to get consumers to pay for things. When it comes to software, unless it's like $2, everyone seems to be like stuck with the 99 cents or $2 products now. And so that's what people are used to. Businesses are used to paying a lot of money for things. So $20 a month seems like a huge discount for them. So there's a lot more opportunity there, I think.
Right. So kind of in summary, probably a smaller scope, some kind of recurring product, ideally geared towards businesses. That's kind of a good place to start.
I think so. Real focused, what do you need as a business owner? In fact, we're working on another product right now, which we need as a business. And we've been building it for just like about a month, really. Well, it's been a little bit longer than that, but really seriously for a month. And it's just me and one other guy doing it here. And we could technically release that product in a few weeks if we wanted to. So let's say it's 6 to 8 weeks worth of work. Two guys, could have probably been one person. And it's a tool I think a lot of businesses are going to be interested in paying for. So I think it's certainly possible to do that. You don't have to think that things are going to take you a year to do. If you're just focused and you do a few things well, you can be a good spot.
So we'll wait for that. Maybe in 2 weeks, there's going to be another product announcement.
No, not in 2 weeks. It could be technically, but there's no chance. We're working on something that's going to hopefully be out later this year, but, just saying that, like, you really could, technically we could get it out there, you know, with 8 weeks worth of developments.
Yeah.
So it's, right. It's certainly possible to do that.
Well, you're being too conservative. You got to get it out now.
Maybe we'll get it out sooner than later. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, Jason, thanks so much for your time. In the show notes, we're going to put links to all of Jason's contact information, the 37 Signals website, and a link to the landing page for the new book that him yes. and David Hanemeyer Hansen are working on. It's called Remote. And so you guys can check that out in the show notes. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time today to talk to us.
Hey, you bet. It was real fun. Thanks for having me on, guys. Good to hear from you again, Justin. By the way, we haven't talked in a while.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you, too.
Cool.
See you guys.
See you later.
Hey, we're starting something new. It's called Shoutouts, and it's an inexpensive way for you to sponsor a show. Starting as low as $39 per episode, you can promote anything you want. It can be your bootstrap startup, a job opening, or a side project. We're going to read these shoutouts at the end of each episode. You can get started at productpeople.tv/shoutout, all one word.